There is an irony in coming back to work on Labor Day weekend. After 7 weeks of rest and renewal, I joyfully return to work on a weekend celebrating labor. I tell you, I have for too much of my life taken work for granted. I mean, my parents always had work when they wanted it, and I mean, I'd been employed since high school with jobs I enjoyed. I took work for granted until my perspective changed during the downturn in 2008 when my dad was laid off. I watched him apply for more than 1,000 jobs over a 7-month period. He was sending in 8 to 10 applications a day, hearing no over and over and over again. When we hit 1,000, we just didn't even know what to do. I mean, no one was hiring. Around the same time, the church I served at the time started a job seekers support group. That first week, we had 7 members who had been like, we just need to talk. Within 2 weeks, that support group had grown to over 100 people. People were looking for a place to find support. Actually, in the midst of that downturn, the stewardship campaign was experiencing some difficulty as well. As the congregation struggled to make the budget work, my senior pastor pulled me aside and let me know, rather frankly, that if funds weren't available, I was going to be the first person let go. Because as a pastor appointed by the bishop, I'd get sent to another church, and I was the only one on staff she knew was guaranteed work if she had to fire somebody. Over the last decade, after these moments, I've put great effort into appreciating work, the work I have and get to do, the people who do other work, the very work that is done. I've learned to respect and appreciate people's labor in a new way. Whether you're currently employed, whether you're looking for something in between jobs, whether you're retired, whether you're putting efforts into children or family, in whatever way you are contributing to the betterment of the world through the labor that you do every day, thank you. Thank you for what you do. This week as I was preparing, I turned to the words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You're found in your bulletin if you want to take a little piece home with you. No work is insignificant. All labor that uplifts humanity has dignity and importance and should be done and undertaken with painstaking excellence. What you do matters. You know, labor that uplifts humanity isn't just work that brings home a paycheck. In fact, some of the most difficult work we do comes with no monetary compensation. Just look at anyone raising a child or caring for an aging parent or supporting a loved one through a very difficult time or treating a difficult person in life with more grace than you realized you had. We put in work. And I tell you, it's the kind of work we're invited to by Jesus. Throughout the Gospels, as we hear of Jesus' life and ministry, his work, as we hear about Jesus' work, we are invited by him to share in that same work. The work of the church. Now, I tell you, the church may be my job, but the work of the church is bigger than a person or a pastor. The work of the church is a calling to all of us. The invitation of Jesus to the work of the church can be summed up with accuracy and alliteration this way: prayer, partnership, and practice. These are 3 things that Jesus asks us to do. If you go through the scriptures, you will hear Jesus very clearly ask us to pray. You will very clearly hear Jesus ask us to partner with one another. You will very clearly hear Jesus ask us to put things into practice. These are 3 things that Jesus asks us to do. And Jesus asks us to pray. Now, the Apostle Paul took that invitation a step further, instructing the early church to pray without ceasing. But Jesus' invitation is actually quite simple. Right before teaching the Lord's Prayer, Jesus says it this way in Matthew 6. When you pray, don't pour out a flood of empty words. Don't do as the Gentiles do. They think that by saying many words, they will be heard. Don't be like them, because God knows what you need before you ask it. Here we're reminded by Jesus, and this is something as someone who prays professionally, it's a very convicting thing to have to be reminded of. Prayer is not performance. We don't need fancy phrases or big words. We don't have to seem like we're coming from some very deep and sacred place that others aren't a part of. All of us as individuals, as we are invited to pray, are invited to do so just as we are. We can pray in so many ways. Whether you fold your hands and close your eyes, or maybe you're just holding a person or a situation in your mind as you go for your morning run. You can call it an intention. You can call it holding someone in the light. You can just outright say you're thinking of someone. At the end of the day, we are all expressing what are basically three deep prayers that exist. All prayer boils down to these things: help, thanks, or wow. These are our prayers. They don't have to be fancy. They just need to be honest. You see, if it is an honest moment of connection between your soul and a true need or another person, whether it's your need, a loved one's need, a stranger's need, the world's need, if it is an honest moment of connection between your soul and this need in the world, if you can stop the chatter of your mind and connect with something bigger, even if only for a moment, you have done the work that we are invited to. Because prayer is a part of our work. Now, Jesus also asks us to partner. Upon creating human life, our ancient story tells us that God looked upon that first life created and said, "Oh, it's not good for a human to be alone. It's not good for work to be done alone. If the work of the church could be done in isolation, there would be no church. It is not good for us to be alone in our efforts to bring forth God's vision of love and justice for the world. In fact, the work Jesus invited us to has always been done in partnership. Amidst his ministry, Jesus recognized that the work was bigger than one person. It was bigger than 12 people. I mean, teachings of love, acceptance, justice, and hope, teachings that can bring a wholeness and transformation, these teachings need to be shared as broadly as possible. Why limit it? And in Luke 10, we watch this unfold. As Jesus does this, after these things, the Lord commissioned 72 others and sent them on ahead in pairs to every city and place that he was about to go. And Jesus said to them, "The harvest is bigger than you can imagine, but the workers are few." The harvest is bigger than you can imagine. It's true. There is a lot of work to do in this world. But not because there's just so many problems. There's a lot of work to do in this world because there is so much possibility budding all around us. But a little bit of loving, tending care can turn into something beautiful. The harvest is bigger than you can imagine. Now, I'll tell you, anytime there are numbers in the Bible, they generally carry a hidden meaning. In this case, the number that Jesus sends out matches the Hebrew understanding at the time of how many different tribes of people filled the whole earth. Jesus is sending out God's message of love, acceptance, justice, and hope to all people symbolically. But he doesn't send 72 individuals to 72 different places. Jesus sends them in pairs because partnership is how our work works. In partnership, we can support one another's weak spots. We can tend to one another's blind spots. We can encourage one another in very weary and worn out moments. If you look at the ministries of our congregation, they are only made possible by teams of people in partnership with one another. Sure, every once in a while, an individual has a great idea, but nothing happens, especially in a sustainable way, if we don't work together to do it. Partnership is part of our work. You see, when you look at the ministries of the congregation, not only are they made by teams of people, our greatest outreach as a congregation has typically been in partnership with other organizations, congregations, and neighbors. Even our church should be in partnership beyond ourselves. You see, in partnership, we are reminded that what is accomplished isn't about us as individuals. It's about something bigger that's shared. Partnership is part of our work. Jesus also invites us into practice, to put into practice the love God has for us and all people. We find it summed up so beautifully in the greatest commandment, as you heard in children's time today. One of the legal experts heard the dispute and saw how well Jesus was answering these questions, so he came over and asked, "Which commandment is the most important of all?" And Jesus replied, "The most important one is this: our God is one, and you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your mind, and with all of your strength. And the second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. No commandment is greater than these." Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. This is our work, to put those ideas into practice. And each one is a different amount of work for all of us. For some of us, loving our neighbor is really easy, and loving ourselves is hard. For others of us, loving ourselves is very easy, and loving others is just tough. And sometimes, loving ourselves and loving our neighbor is just difficult. We're invited to the work. And I love that it's the word practice, because it takes practice for us to become good at this work. But it is work to which we are invited into, putting the practice of God's love for us into our living, not only in our conversations, not only in our thinking, not only in our prayers, not only in our best intentions, but putting it into practice in life, in our actions, our interactions, our reactions. We are tasked with practicing love. Love God, love neighbor, love yourself. The job description for the work of the church is one word: love. Daily practice of love is our work. Prayer, partnership, practice. These are the labors to which we are invited. And this isn't just church work. This is the work of the church. Thank you for letting me work alongside you as we do. Amen.